Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. It's Monday, the 24th of April. You're listening to KFM. It's Caoimhe Hearney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Professor Donal O'Shea. He's a professor at the Department of Chemistry at the RCSI. Health experts have warned of serious risks associated with vaping and said greater regulation is required to control the growing problem. We'll speak to Lorraine Rowan. She's CEO of Chuck Charman. Friday is Go Purple Day, raising awareness of domestic violence. We'll speak to Orla Keegan, Head of Bereavement at the Irish Hospice Foundation, how to cope with the loss of a pet and why it's important to mark their death. And then we'll speak to Professor Alison Hood. She's Dean of Arts, Celtic Studies and Philosophy at Maynooth University. And Maynooth University Arts and Minds Festival will take place from the 3rd to the 6th of May. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, 045 898 999. That's our landline number here. If you want to email me, it's studio at kfmradio.com, or you can send me a text or a WhatsApp, 0833 97 97 97.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, health experts have warned of serious risks associated with vaping and said greater regulation is required to control the growing problem. Well, I'm joined on the line by Professor at the Department of Chemistry at the RCSI, Professor Donal O'Shea. Good afternoon, Donal.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Donal, when we think about vaping, for one thing that many people might not know, and I've only found out recently, is that you can actually just buy vapes even if you're under 18 and they contain, like, nicotine.
Yes, that's correct. Within Ireland, you can, yes. There is legislation currently in the works, so to speak, but it hasn't made it into law yet. So right now, today, you can go into a shop and buy vaping products if you're under 18, and quite often they're positioned right next to the chocolate bars and the sweets.
It's quite worrying.
It is, yeah.
When we speak about vaping then, for people that might not know, explain to us what vaping is.
Yes, so vaping, it comes in different forms, I guess, in terms of the devices and the liquids, but essentially it's a way to deliver nicotine to the lungs, and it involves heating liquid solutions of nicotine to relatively high temperatures, and then inhaled into the lungs using a device system that can look at anything like a pen, or sometimes rather large or bigger ones, that, where in those devices the users can fill them with whatever solution they wish, I guess. Mm. So the devices, it can be a bit confusing. There are different ones. Unfortunately, a little bit confusing on the liquid side as well as what's in them, in that there is a huge array of different flavours of these products. So the manufacturers have been putting flavour materials into them, obviously, to make the products more attractive.
That's what I was going to say. Many of them appear quite colourful and almost nearly marketed towards the younger cohort, Donal.
Unfortunately, that's quite true, really. When you see the most popular flavours are fruit flavours and sweet flavours, they're very eye-catching colours, very well-marketed in that sense. And, of course, in terms of product placement within shops in Ireland, they're often positioned right next to the sweets. So, yes, from an under 18 years point of view, or a teenager's point of view, so to speak, it's very hard for these kids to really appreciate the risk that they're taking with these devices.
Donal, so far, I know we're in the early stages of knowing how bad these are for our bodies, but are there any studies or any kind of inclinations yet of just how far it could go in terms of risk?
Yeah, their studies are emerging. I guess it shows that the effects on the cardiovascular systems and the lungs, especially of younger people, these organs are delicate and they are still growing and developing. So any chemical insult on those will have a long-term impact, especially if it's going on for a long time period. So that's really what our concern is in the youth vaping, is essentially these products contain a highly addictive substance. So for a teenager, they often think, well, sure, when I want to stop this, I can. But it may not be so easy after a while because they become addicted to nicotine. And then you have a whole host of different flavour chemicals as well. So it's been shown to make asthma worse in younger adults. And of course, then some of the catastrophic events that happened in the United States in 2019, where one particular chemical led to the deaths of 68 young people. That luckily was a product that wasn't on sale in Ireland or in Europe, but it just shows the unknowns and the risks that are out there that really are not fully appreciated by our legislators or by maybe teenagers or the general public.
Absolutely. And I know that, you know, you're not supposed to vape with indoors. But because of the nature of vaping, you'd often see maybe someone sitting at a table, you know, in the corner, and they might be vaping away.
Yeah.
And Donald, that even kind of plays into how dangerous it can be, because you literally can use this 24/7. Like, it's not like a cigarette where, you know, you're not going to be able to smoke a cigarette in your classroom because, you know, people would know. But you can really do this anytime you like.
Exactly. So that's what's sort of been seen in other countries a few years ago, especially in the United States, in the UK, and is now happening in Ireland. In schools, it's very hard to police this or to catch this, so to speak. So because there isn't, you don't have to light up the product, and it looks quite often very innocuous and like a small pen. So it's very difficult to sort of know just what the extent of it is in our schools at the moment. But based upon, I guess, the sales of these products, it does seem to be rapidly growing. Again, then from a user's point of view, it's true. You know, if you're a young person, you first start smoking, it's actually quite an unpleasant experience. It takes some persistence. And maybe then over a time period, you may become addicted to tobacco smoking. But here, these products, these are very flavorful, they're very sweet, they're very, give the impression to a younger person that they're safe. So you can see how they would be brought into this particular type of inhalation of nicotine much, much more readily than perhaps smoking a cigarette, which has a bad smell and negative connotations, especially with teenagers around it.
Absolutely. I have a message in here, Donald, 0833 97 97 97. This lady says, I was suffering with really bad anxiety and heart palpitations that came on all of a sudden. Then I gave up the vape and it went away. And that comes in from Amy. Any correlation there?
Yeah, there's been reports showing that when you're vaping on nicotine, it leads to elevated blood pressure immediately upon vaping and increased heart rate. So there are documented medical reports on that. So that's not at all surprising.
Okay, so that lady obviously suffering with that. How soon do you think that we'll see maybe some kind of legislation coming in on this, Donal?
I don't know the timeline. It's been in the works for quite some time now, and I think the government promised it this year, but the legislation is still relatively limited. Yes, it will restrict the sales to under 18-year-olds, which is most certainly urgently needed. But I do think the government needs to be a bit more ambitious in their legislation and recognise that really that there are inherent risks here in passing on a nicotine addiction scourge to our younger generations.
Okay.
And simply a ban at 18 may not be sufficient. As we see that with tobacco, we see that with alcohol. We have to be a little bit more realistic and give stronger guidance maybe to our younger population.
Yeah, and I suppose that then the education within schools needs to probably take in vaping as well. But if this is something that a child can go in and buy over the counter, I don't think they're going to think of it as having the serious impacts the way that cigarettes would, Donal. So it would nearly seem counterproductive in a way.
I agree. Until that's stopped, we really can't be preaching at our younger generation.
Mm.
We have no authority to do so. We really have let them down to a significant extent, that the current situation that exists today in Ireland should never have been allowed to take place. But it's there. It's what we have today. And, you know, you can appreciate the government are trying to rectify it, but I think This is growing at a fairly significant pace within Ireland. So really they have to begin to act a bit faster, I think.
Absolutely. I suppose on the other side, and the flip side of that, the first time maybe people might have, you know, come across vapes initially, you know, some people within Ireland would use them as a substitute to give up smoking. Now, I know that's not recommended by the HSE, but what would you think of that, Donal?
Yeah, so it's the first thing. What was surprising when we sort of discovered from just talking to the general public is that many people don't recognise or didn't realise that it's not recommended medically within Ireland. But let's recognise it is across in the UK. But what we see from the research literature that has been published, there is maybe a public perception that this is some magic cure for tobacco addiction. Unfortunately, it is absolutely not. And what we're beginning to see is that it essentially, where people are ending up essentially being dual users, both tobacco and vaping, and it's not solving problems. It's actually creating new problems. And are we just simply taking one really, really awful addiction of tobacco and replacing it with another? So there is often an impression that this is some form of a magic cure, but unfortunately it is not. So what is recommended within Ireland is that you talk to your medical professional, such as your GP and your pharmacist, for the best advice that you can get to try to beat that awful scourge of tobacco addiction. It's just not the solution that it's touted for. That's the problem, I guess. There are other medical proven methods for nicotine replacement therapies that really you should explore first, I would recommend.
Before I let you go, Donal, I suppose to any of the TDs, councillors and powers that be that are listening in Kildare, what would your message be to them in terms of moving some kind of legislation forward and getting this tightened?
Yeah, I think they have to move really very quickly on it, and I think they have to think beyond the current draft of the legislation. The politicians led the way 20 years ago with indoor smoking, and I think they could do so again with vaping. And the cost of the healthcare system down the line, maybe 10 years from now, 15 years from now, when these diseases are emerging, will be very significant. So why should we do this to ourselves, I guess, for really no gain?
Absolutely. Professor Donal O'Shea, Professor at the Department of Chemistry at the RCSI. Thank you very much, Donal, for joining us. Now, we were talking just a few minutes ago with Professor Donal O'Shea about the serious risks associated with vaping. And I have a message in here to 0833 97 97 97. And this person says, it's a disgrace. There's no control over it. I walked into City West Shopping Centre on Saturday evening and the first thing that you meet is a pop-up stand to sell this dirt being vapes there in relation to that, directly targeted at the kids that are hanging around there. And I think that's the point that Professor Donal O'Shea was making, that we don't know the actual real effects of this yet, but right now 18 year olds can, so 15 year olds can go in and buy these vapes and they can use them, and there's nicotine in them, and we don't know how they're going to affect people's health down the line. I'm looking at something here. And if you are not blessed with height, then you might be very interested in this, because leg lengthening procedures are on the rise and have become popular among men. This is according to a doctor. So limb lengthening surgery is a procedure which makes an arm or a leg bone longer and is also used to treat skeletal dysplasia, bone growth issues and bone length differences. The surgery costs thousands of dollars and can be an intense process. However, it has become popular and accepted in the last 5 years. That's according to Dr. Shanhab Manahubian, a surgeon at the Height Lengthening Institute in Burbank, California. So he says, I even have 60 to 65 year old guys that have come to me to undergo the procedure because it just doesn't stop. The short jokes keep on going and they feel inferior. This is according to the doctor, and he told this to NBC News. He said he expects to perform 50 height lengthening operations this year, more than double than the 20 he did 3 years ago. What does the surgery involve, you ask? Well, limb lengthening is done as a gradual process so that the bones and soft tissue, skin, muscles and nerves can slowly increase in length. According to the International Centre for Limb Lengthening, the process typically takes several months. During the surgery, doctors cut the bone to create two different segments, and an orthopaedic lengthening device is inserted into the bone. External fixators are also placed outside of the limb. After the surgery, the bones begin the healing process. This period of time is called the latency period. After the latency period, the patient will adjust the orthopaedic device so that it slowly pulls apart the two bone segments. The International Centre for Limb Lengthening says the process of separating the two bones is called distraction. Patients who undergo the procedure are given instructions on how to use the limb lengthening device and how to should best take care of it. So according to this survey conducted and published in 2016 by Body Logic MD, it looked at over 1,000 men and women in the US. The survey asked people a series of questions regarding height, their beliefs and height, and their preferences for height. The study found that 60% of men and 49% of women wished they were taller. The average ideal height for male participants was 6 foot, while female participants said their ideal height was 5'9". Really? 5'9"? That seems very tall for a woman. Let me know, I mean, as an average height, let me know how you feel about your height. I am 5'4.6, according to the doctor. So I'm just shy of 5'5". So I think I'd probably be in and around the average. And I think most of the girls in my group are in and around that, and probably even smaller. And one of my friends, I think, is about 5'11". And she, you know, she doesn't like to wear heels or anything like that. So, you know, there can be pros and cons on both sides. Men, I think, probably, now I could be saying this and I could get a load of messages in saying, no, you're wrong. But I think generally men tend to be a little bit more touchy about their height. But let me know, what height are you, and what height would you like to be? 0833 97 97 97. Coming up after the break, we'll be speaking to Lorraine Roan. She is the CEO of Chuck Charman.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, a designated Go Purple Day is on this Friday. It's a national day of fundraising and awareness for local domestic violence services, including Chuck Charman, which is based here in County Kildare. And I'm joined now on the line by Lorraine Roan. She's CEO of Chuck Charman. Good afternoon, Lorraine.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. Thanks for having me on.
Delighted to have you, Lorraine. I suppose it's a good news this week, really, for in terms of domestic violence and the things around it, because I know earlier today staff at AIB, it was announced that they are to be offered 10 days paid leave if they experience domestic violence. And the bank said that it's part of a commitment to provide a work environment that is safe and supportive for all. So I'm sure you're delighted about that.
Absolutely, it's great news, and I suppose it's off the back of some other big companies such as Vodafone announcing that as well. So I suppose it's great to see that employers are taking the issue of domestic violence and abuse seriously, but also prioritising the needs, the well-being and the health of their employees by doing so.
Absolutely. Tell us a little bit about Go Purple Day and what it entails.
Sure. Well, I suppose Go Purple Day, essentially, it's a national day of fundraising and awareness for local domestic violence services, which obviously includes Chuck Charman, which is the only dedicated specialised service working to support women and children who are experiencing domestic violence in Kildare. The Go Purple Day itself was established in 2020. Originally, it was established in Meath by a member of An Garda Síochána. So essentially, what it's grown into now is a national day of awareness. So it's grown past Mead, and all of the domestic violence services are working in partnership with An Garda Síochána to raise the issue of domestic violence and abuse, but also more importantly to showcase the services that are available for women and children and indeed men who are experiencing domestic violence and abuse.
It's really a great initiative. If people want to get involved this Friday, do they have to sign up first, or what way does it work, Lorraine?
No, so essentially this Friday is Go Purple Day, which is Friday 28th of April. Chuck Charman are hosting two pop-up events. So we will have one in Market Square in Kildare Town, and that's happening from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And then our second pop-up event is happening in Popular Square, Naas, and that's from 12:30 till approximately 2:30, 3 p.m. So the events really will just be a fun day. So we're going to have Liam Moran Music School will be there, as well with the Naas Hospital Choir will be there to provide a bit of entertainment. We're going to have a presence from Chuck Charman there, so some of the team, and also some of the An Garda Síochána members. And I suppose just a special mention to Garda Sergeant John Dunn. He's the Kildare Community Policing Unit, so he's really taken this this Go Purple Day and worked really well with Chuck Charman, you know, to establish these events so that we could raise awareness. So I suppose really just to encourage all of your listeners to come and join us, I suppose just to learn more about the services, but also just for a fun day out.
Absolutely. So just again there, Kildare Town Market Square, 10 until 12 on Friday, and then in Poplar Square in Naas from 12:30 till around 2:30 or 3. And yourselves will be there, Lorraine.
Absolutely. And I suppose if anyone follows our social media, you'll see a lot of our flyers with the information. And just a big thank you as well to Donovan's Printing in Newbridge, who really been such a support and given us loads of materials so we could showcase today. So we'd be delighted to see anyone that wants to come and join us.
Okay, that is Lorraine Rowan. She is CEO of Chalk Charmin. And with that news, that Friday's Go Purple Day, raising awareness for domestic violence. Thanks very much to Lorraine. Of course, if you want the numbers for Chalk Charmin, there's a helpline here. It's a Kildare number. That's 045 527 584, and that is 045 527 584. I was talking a little earlier on about leg lengthening procedures that are on the rise and have become popular among men. And I was telling people to text in, are they happy with their height? And Teresa texted in and said, hi, Cuiva, did you ever hear the saying, there is good goods in small parcels, never mind being small? And Teresa, I did, because I was a very, very small child. Very small. And I used to, another favourite one of mine was poison comes in small packages. So there you go. Never underestimate a small person, because, you know, we can be quite the feisty ones if we have to be. That's one I used to like to use all the time. I was so small before I was around 16. I remember when I went into first year in St. Mary's in Naas, and I went, you know, to get the school skirt. And the smallest one, I still had to get taken up a couple of inches and taken in. Look, I took a spurt in the end, and I'm not too bad. So I'm happy enough with my height. I think I'd keep it. I wouldn't try and change myself. Now, how to cope with the loss of a pet and why it is important to mark their death. Losing a pet can bring its own particular type of grief. And I'm joined on the line now by Orla Keegan. She's head of bereavement at the Irish Hospice Foundation. Good afternoon, Orla.
Hi, Cuiva. How are you?
I'm great, Orla. Orla, I suppose it's sometimes maybe a controversial one, because people don't always view pets as, you know, well, like obviously they're not people, but sometimes we're not allowed to grieve in the same way. But obviously over the weekend we heard that sad news that President Michael D. Higgins, a well-known dog, Brode, passed away, and obviously it's been everywhere.
That's right. And I suppose when you say it's controversial, I suppose one of the things is that it can be a sort of an invisible grief, and that maybe people are judging themselves. They're thinking, oh, I shouldn't be so upset. It's just an animal. Whereas really what they're mourning is a relationship. And that relationship could have been, well, look, Brode was 11. And look, you know, the president and his wife would have been caring and nurturing for that wee being for 11 years. And caring for something, that creates a huge bond.
Absolutely.
And it's good for us. It's good for us to care for somebody or some being outside of ourselves. So one of the phrases that we use in our work is that grief is the price of love. Mm. Now, if you love your animal, be it your cat or your dog or any type of pet that you have at home, there is a hard side to that love when you lose the pet.
Absolutely. I mean, I think anyone who has a pet, you know, they'll understand this. And to be honest with you, Orla, before I had a pet, I would have been one of those people who would have been
it's
only a dog. And I'll say that, I'll put my hand up. But once you have it then, and you have the dog, it's not just a dog. Sometimes I honestly feel like my dog could talk to me. They're just
absolutely
so in tune.
Absolutely. And they'll be always on your mind. You'll be saying, oh God, I've got to get up and let the dog out, or better bring the dog for a walk. And, you know, oh, I can't stay out any later because the dog will be on its own. So they run through your life, every bit of your life. You open the door, delighted to see you, you know, so they infuse your life and they enrich your life. And that means when they're gone, there's a big loss. And I guess as much as we'd be asking people to do is to just, and this accounts for every type of grief, don't judge, you know, allow a person their natural reaction to a loss. Mm. And I mean, I'll give you another example. We call this sort of loss disenfranchised loss, and it means that people don't get it or haven't thought about it. Say your ex dies, you know, you're divorced from somebody, and most people will think, oh, well, that's grand, or you'd left them anyway, and, you know, there was no relationship left. Whereas you can have a really strong grief reaction to that type of loss. Mm. So as good friends, as good neighbours, let's just not judge. Let's say, oh, how are you?
And with the, in terms of an ex, and I don't want to move away from the dogs too much, but in terms of an ex, like, people would say, well, you know, you're actually not really included then in the whole thing either much, because you're not part of that family, really. Yeah,
exactly. And that can be the same with a pet. There's like, if a person dies, there's a script, you know, obviously, in terms of moving into the funeral and getting a lot of social support. With an animal, obviously, that isn't as clear at all. Mm. Now, the vets and the vet nurses are very good at guiding people at this time. But one of the things we'd urge someone to do if their pet has died is to take a bit of time to have a little ritual. And that could be as much as, you know, you might be burying them, or after a few weeks, maybe scattering their ashes. You might do something like, you know, set up a little memory box where you keep their collar, frame a picture. You know, you're just acknowledging the transition from that wee pet being there in your life to them now being apart from you. So it's and particularly with children, that's a very important thing to do, is to help them have a little opportunity to ritualize it. Maybe, you know, draw some pictures, write wee stories on what this animal meant to them and to the family.
Okay. I suppose, Orla, are funerals for pets, is that a thing? Like, you know, can you say there about the scattering of the ashes? Like, is there somewhere where pets can be cremated?
There is. And again, very much your vet would guide you on that. So there are regulations, obviously. My own wee dog, I had two dogs who died and both been cremated. And I had very different relationships with them. So one, we scattered on a beach in Kerry because that's where she loved. That was her favourite place. And that's where we used to spend our holidays. And then my wee boy, Nate, when he died, he was such a loving little dog. We couldn't bear to part with his ashes because we felt he would have been lonely. He wasn't independent like her. And I always use that as an example, that it's the loss of a relationship. Each of them had their own connection to me and to my family. They were separate little beings. So, you know, honour that. Yeah. I suppose that's what I'd say to people. Honour the relationship that you have and don't be embarrassed about it.
In terms of work then, Orla, because, you know, if your dog dies or any pet in that way, you know, it can be very hard to go in. You could be really devastated, and it could be very hard to go into work and say, look, I need a day off because this has happened, because I'm sure many people would feel that in some places they may be laughed at or are told, you know, this isn't justified.
Sure. And again, the answer, I suppose, to that is we also talk about mental health and employee well-being, and really just about the discretion that a manager would have with an individual. We talk about doing the best by your staff. You know, your staff are the lifeblood of any organisation. So, you know, it behoves you as a manager to know what's going on for them and what their needs are. Forcing somebody to come in, you know, there's a term called presenteeism. You can have the body of a person in their work, but it doesn't mean that they're actively working. Mm-hmm. And also, as an employer, if you do right by a person, that counts for great dividends in terms of just loyalty and connection.
So, absolutely.
You know, it's the human touch.
In terms of then maybe a new pet after loss. And again, this is one that, you know, you see some people, they lose a pet and they're out the next week and they have a new dog. What would be your thoughts on that, or what's the best way to approach it?
Well, again, every family will have a different way. Some people will never want to put themselves in the way of that pain again. And that might be as common a reaction as another family saying, look, I want to get a new pet. So there's no one way. I think what I'd go back to there is the notion of relationship. You're not replacing the pet. Sure, you might be inviting another animal presence into your family, but you're not replacing the one who died.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think anyone who's had a pet will know that you can't replace them. Sure, you can't.
No.
Orla, thanks very much for your time this afternoon. That's Orla Keegan, Head of Bereavement and at the Irish Hospice Foundation.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, we were talking earlier on about leg lengthening surgery and the rise of it in the US. And I was getting people to text in about their height and are they happy with their height. And Patricia, very bold Patricia, has texted in saying, I always find that men who are small say they're 5'9". So I don't know if that's true. And obviously, Patricia, you think that they're not 5'9". Is that what you're trying to say there? Anyway, I suppose height is one of those things. I think generally Irish people are fairly tall, like in comparison. I know the Dutch are the tallest race in the world, as far as I know. But I think, you know, we're not that small over here, generally. An American Airlines flight was forced to return back to the airport after a possible bird strike. So the Boeing 737-800 had departed from Columbus to Phoenix on Sunday morning before a crew member reported the strike at around 8 a.m. That was Eastern time, the Federal Aviation Administration said in a statement. So the plane, which was carrying 173 passengers and crew, had to turn back shortly after and managed to land safely. That's according to American Airlines' own statement. The flight landed normally and taxied and safely to the gate under its own power. The aircraft was taken out of service for maintenance, and our team is working to get customers back on their way. Safety is our top priority. So John Glenn, Columbus International Airport, said in a statement posted on Twitter that the emergency crews responded to the incident and that the aircraft landed safely and the airport is open and operational. So there you go. The plane was struck by birds going into the engine, which you always hear about that, but you never actually think it happens. But yeah, the airline said it experienced bird strikes to an engine and the aircraft's nose. The plane landed safely in Cuba with no injuries reported, and some passengers left the aircraft using the emergency exit on the wings, while others used the inflatable slides. And just as I'm reading this here now, I was having a coffee with my brother over the weekend, and I was in a fit of laughter because I said to him, this is probably something that some men might be able to identify with. But there was a plane, I'm going to have to look it up now and tell you either today or tomorrow. There was a plane that had to turn back after departing for Dubai. I think they were flying from somewhere in the UK, possibly London, because someone went to the toilet, did a number two, and stank up the whole place, and the flight couldn't continue. They actually had to turn back. Anyway, I really got a good laugh out of it, because I just imagine being on that plane. Like what would the pilot say? Like, does he come on and actually say the truth, or, you know, do they give some other explanation? I just don't know. Very interesting. Let me know what you think. 0833 97 97 97. Now, Maynooth University will hold their second ever Arts and Mind Festival from May 3rd to the 6th. And I'm joined now on the line by Professor Alison Hood. She's the Dean of the Faculty of Arts, Celtic Studies and Philosophy at Maynooth University. Good afternoon, Alison.
Good Good afternoon, and thank you very much.
I mean, Alison, it's really wonderful that here in Kildare we have something so culturally diverse, such as this, a festival like no other, really.
I hope so, yes. We're really excited about it because there's a wide variety of events. As you say, it's really diverse. So it's on campus over 4 days. So one of the things we have, for example, is a performance by the multiple award-winning Irish folk duo, Ye Vagabonds. We have Irish National Opera in concert. We have book readings by Nicole Slattery, and that's the author of Nothing Special, and Deepti Kapoor, the author of Age of Vice. And also, for the first time, the festival will partner with Maynooth Film for All. And on the opening night of the festival, show a screening of After Sun. So obviously, that's very well known to us all here in Kildare, the internationally acclaimed Paul Mescal movie. So we're really looking forward to that. And then on Saturday, there's a number of Irish language events that are taking place and also some virtual opera experiences.
It's brilliant that you're kicking things off on the Wednesday with the film screening of After Sun, because many of us within Kildare, Alison, will have heard of After Sun and, of course, Paul Mescal. And it was, of course, the movie that he was nominated for Best Actor in, but maybe haven't seen it. And it's a great chance now to go along with a couple of friends or family members and take in the festival and then also see this great movie.
Absolutely, and the more the merrier. The festival will close in the Aula Maxima with Irish language rap and electronic music on the final evening. And basically, it's all about Maynooth University reaching out, welcoming the wider communities and celebrating the best in both Irish and international arts and culture.
Okay.
So it's live and in-person arts events.
Amazing. Is there a cost for attending each event, Alison?
No, a number of the events are free and there's a minimal cost for some of them. All of the details can be found on the Maynooth University website. So that's either mu.ie or maynoothuniversity.ie, and it's on the main welcoming page. And if you like, you can go into /arts and minds festival. So that's the complete program to book specific tickets and find out about venues and details. We also actually have an alumni reunion lunch on the Saturday, and that's welcoming back anyone that has graduated on the threes. So 2013, 2003, 1993, etc. So we're really looking forward to welcoming our alumni back, especially during this event.
Okay, so if anyone has graduated in 2003, 93, any of the threes, they're invited along.
Exactly.
That's very, very good one, yeah. they're invited along to attend that. And of course, there's probably people listening in here, Alison, that have, you know, maybe never been to Maynooth University, perhaps maybe live in Kildare, have never been to Maynooth. But this really is open to anyone to attend.
Oh, absolutely. The more the merrier, really, and all are welcome. So friends, neighbours, children, everyone is welcome. We're working on a new university strategy at the moment, and one thing that's really, really important to us as a university is to really include the local community.
Okay. The KFM will also have a broadcast, an outside broadcast on the Saturday, May the 6th from 11 until 2. And as Alison said, this is running from the 3rd until the 6th. So there's loads to see. You can find out more information on the website. If you just Google Maynooth University Arts and Minds Festival, everything will pop up. I'm looking at it on screen now. And you can also buy the tickets online through Eventbrite, and all the information is there. Like Alison said, some have a cost and some have are free to attend. So there's something there for everyone, and there's more information, like I said, online. But thank you very much to Professor Alison Hood, the Dean of the Faculty of Arts, Celtic Studies and Philosophy at Maynooth University. Thanks, Alison.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, changing tack a small bit, and I've opened a can of worms here because I was talking earlier about a plane that had to be turned around because someone did something smelly on the plane. But it was actually a British Airways flight which was forced to turn around because of a smelly poo. And I apologise to anyone who's eating their lunch or anything like that. But it did happen. It actually happened back in 2015. So it must have been an old article that I saw over the weekend. But the plane was heading from Heathrow to Dubai on a 7-hour flight. And Apparently, one of the passengers on the plane said that the pilot made an announcement requesting senior cabin crew, and we knew something that was a bit odd. And then about 10 minutes later, the pilot said, "You may have noticed there's quite a pungent smell coming from one of the toilets." And basically, the air hostess said there was a decision made to turn around for the safety and comfort of customers on board. And basically, because of the cabin pressure, things like that can become a problem. So there you go. Dick Maher has texted in and he said, "Hi, Caoimhe, that must have been a lovely conversation you were having with your brother while drinking a cup of coffee. It just popped up on my phone, Dick." And then I was slagging him because, look, I won't go into detail, but anyone who has brothers will know what I mean. And someone else has texted in, a Calverstown listener, to say, "As the jockeys say, when horses are in front of them, flying beep can't be licked." And that comes in from a Calverstown listener. No idea what that means, but thank you very much for your message. That's all we have time for today. I'll try and keep it a little less disgusting tomorrow. I'll be back at the same time between 2 and 3.